Hi, today is January 30th, 2016. This is Mobile News Podcast number 147. I'm Todd Ogasso-Ward, my good friend John Westfall.
Hello, I'm now John. The majority good friend.
You're a majority good friend.
Because this is the 74th Mobile Views that I have graced you with my presence on. Uh-huh. And since we're at 147, you've had 73 where you've had lesser guests.
I won't tell them you said that, since many of them are our mutual friends.
Todd, you get it all with me. You get great jokes, you get moments of pauses, you get rants like the one I have today, and I am so exceedingly humble as well.
Well, I haven't seen you in person in a long time, but I do recall you're kind of a tall person, so yeah, you might be actually taller than a lot of our other guests.
Yes, and I am tall, too.
Okay, so congratulations to us. It's been really fun having you. I want to thank you. You know, I know it's a chore sometimes to be on, have some time every week to be on with me, but I really do appreciate it. And you know, our tens of listeners. Although we did have a lot more when we were able to get my podcast mentioned at Extreme Tech a couple of weeks ago, so that was nice. But
yeah, our podcast that you decided to record at a time.
Yeah, without you, it feels better. But in any case, for folks listening, yeah, John's been on for more than anybody else who's been a co-host or whatever. And I haven't had a lot of co-hosts. I mean, a couple of my friends were able to help me out now and then before John joined me, and it's been a lot of fun. How long have we been doing this together now? A couple of years now?
Yeah, I want to say it was 2013, like December 2013,
yeah.
Around there.
Yeah, So it's been a while. Okay, so moving on. The first thing I wanted to mention is one of my favorite, I guess it's a service, a paid service, Audible. I'm a big fan of audiobooks. Audible is owned by Amazon. They got bought a couple of years ago, and apparently Amazon is now investing in creating content for Audible in the form of podcasts. They're apparently recruiting comedians and producers, not us though.
No.
To create podcasts, you know, kind of like how Netflix has been creating its own content. And I should say, I believe Audible has been not creating content, I guess, but creating audio content in the sense that they have hired actors and professional readers to read books that have not been made into audio format. So they've kind of been doing that, but not to create completely original content in the sense of, you know, brand new stuff to actually save versus novels and nonfiction books that already exist. So that's kind of interesting. And hey, Amazon, two things you should know about John and myself. A, we're not proud. And nope. B, we're cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to pay
us
to do something.
And we're not very principled either. So no. We'll toe a party line.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
We'll start using Amazon phones.
There you go.
At least that's what we'll say that we're using.
Yeah.
But we won't contradict that in any public venue.
Yeah, we'll exclusively use the Fire tablets.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe not that. I don't think you can. I don't think you can cast that to Apple TV.
I mean, at least as far as the public is concerned, we will not use anything other than Amazon.
That's right. So we're cheap. Call. You know, I'm in the phone book. We're here.
Yeah.
Well, I should say I'm here. John's there, but together we're here virtually.
Yeah, we are cross-country.
That's right. Pretty darn, well, actually, yeah, in total miles, we're probably about 4,000 or 5,000 miles apart.
Yeah.
Speaking of apart at a distance, one of the more interesting things is, you know, there's been wireless charging for a while. If you've got a Android phone especially, you've probably been able to use one of the Qi chargers, spelled Qi, by the way, to charge your phone by just placing it on a charging mat and so forth. But apparently, according to Bloomberg, Apple is developing a wireless charging system for their mobile devices that can be up to about maybe a meter away. There's nothing for sure, but that's a Bloomberg's reporting. That's kind of interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. So the idea is, I don't know if you have to buy it's going to be an iMac, or you buy, you know, some other a giant, what was the thing in 2001, A Space Odyssey, the big black monolith. Monolith.
That's okay.
They should have a black monolith that you put in your house, and You just put your phone anywhere near it and it'll charge.
Well, what would be really slick would be build in the chargers into the Apple devices that stay permanently in one place. Mm-hmm. So the Cinema displays,
iMac,
iMacs, the Mac Pros, and even MacBooks, things like that, so that as you have those plugged into power, if you put your phone down near them, your phone will charge up. I would love to see this, because honestly, the current charging capabilities are nothing I've ever thought was really worth going out and getting, because you have to lay your phone on a charge mat.
Okay, now, I will disagree with you on this one, John, because I have a Qi charger from, I think, Energizer. And several of my phones, my Nexus Android phones, support Qi charging. And, you know, until I put a fat case on my Nexus 6, which it turns out was too fat to allow the Qi charger to work across that distance. It's maybe a couple of, maybe a centimeter thick. I mean, it's a pretty thick case. It was really handy. I left the Qi charger in my office on my desk, and my former Nexus 4 phone could not really hold the charge well, so I'd throw it on while I was eating lunch or whatever, and it was great. It would do it, you know, top it off during lunchtime without having to plug anything, and just kind of toss it on this part of my desk, and it worked great. So I found it very useful personally.
I don't think it would be any more useful to me than just having a cable at my desk, which I already have done in various places.
You're not old and lazy like I am. That's your problem.
I'm young and hungry.
That's right. So, you know, for me, it's like, I need the fine motor skills to actually pick up the cable and see the little micro USB hole, which is not all that easy some days, you know.
Anyone, you want to try to guess what Apple would brand this? Jeez. I'm saying Apple Air Power.
Air Power. iPower.
No, they've been getting rid of the eyes.
You think so?
I think it's going to be... just be Apple Power.
Apple Power. It'd be cool.
Apple Juice would be really good, but...
Apple Juice. I like that. That is perfect. That is perfect. Yeah, they could, you know, they could co-market this with, like, you know, Naked Juice people and...
Yeah.
Yeah, you could get a, you know, like a six-pack of Naked Apple Juice with your Apple Juice.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Exactly. Oh, why doesn't anyone hire us?
I know. We are branding geniuses. Microsoft,
really,
at least.
We really are.
Because they have no branding geniuses at all.
Microsoft wouldn't be happy unless we called it Microsoft Power Consumer Professional Home Edition Workstation.
Second edition.
Yeah, second edition Service Pack 7 SE.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that sounds about right for a Microsoft name. Or Zune.
Yeah.
And make it a horrible green-brown color.
Yes.
Yes. Saying, I'm sorry, did your cat make a mess? Oh, no, that's my charger.
Yeah, that's just my iPad.
That's right.
Or my iPod. Why does it look like Microsoft designed it? Yeah, they did.
Okay, next up, another Apple item. This one was in 9to5 Mac. They are saying that the latest rumor is there will be a March 14th announcement for an iPad Air 3, which I'm kind of interested in. iPhone 5 SE, that's the rumored 4-inch iPhone, which is 5. Notice it's not a 6, 6S.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 5. That's kind of interesting going backwards. And some kind of new Apple Watch or watch bands or something like that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was originally that there was going to be an Apple Watch refresh, but... Even for Apple, that's way too soon. That's 10 months, 11 months.
Yeah.
You know, you figure that the Apple Watch was available April 24th.
Right.
So I think the new rumors I'm reading are that watch refresh in September along with new iPhones and just bands in March, which gives me hope that the bands will be... for the whatever the Apple Watch 2 is, that the bands will be compatible, which I think most people have thought Apple wouldn't be that mean to sell these hugely expensive bands and then all of a sudden say, yeah, the new Apple Watch, by the way, you can't use your old bands on it.
Sure.
But I think this is further evidence that they probably will make them compatible because it would be pretty crazy to introduce new bands in March and then by September you can't use them anymore.
Yeah. By the way, I know you are an Apple Watch user. Are you still using it? Still enjoying it?
Yeah, it is on my wrist right now.
Very good. Very good. I am still using my Moto 360. So I am still happy with that. In general, you know, I think these watches and other kind of notification devices, the Fitbit Charge type bands, even the Microsoft band, which some of our friends have and like, you know, these are all super useful for really one thing, and that's for notifications. Everything else is gravy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I have realized there are a few niche cases where I'm like, why didn't I just do that on my watch? It would have been easier, so maybe it's a learning curve thing. Yeah. But yeah, it's notifications I really like. The ability to kind of know what's happening, because even though it is hugely, I guess, socially a faux pas to look at your watch, people do with their phones all the time now. Mm-hmm. So I think it's almost become more accepted. It is interesting to me when I sit in meetings with faculty and staff at the university level, people are looking at devices. They're not kind of bound by this, I must always keep my eyes on whoever's talking at the same time.
Yeah. You know, I think the social rules for watches is different now than it was, I don't know, 20 years ago. Because back then, you know, a watch was really for one thing, to tell time. A few people had chronometers with, you know, some other functions. But generally speaking, you looked at it because you were late, you wanted to get out of a boring conversation and do something else. But, you know, since people stopped wearing watches, if you have a watch on, everybody assumes it's a smartwatch of some kind now, because why else would you wear a watch?
Well, and I also think professionals today are much more understanding. Maybe it's a professional's thing, where if you're a professional and you glance at your watch, whoever you're talking to doesn't think they're boring you. They think, oh, he probably has a meeting and, you know, he just wants to check the time.
Right.
Might be the difference.
It is a different world. You know, I know, gosh, maybe it was 10, 15 years ago, which is not that long ago. There are a number of people who frowned upon folks who brought notebooks into a meeting to take notes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely true.
You know, I, of course, thought that, why would I do it any other way if I have a notebook PC?
Yeah, if I can type at 95 words per minute and my writing looks like chicken scratch, the notes are going to be much more useful if I type them.
Exactly. And yet there are people who said, well, it's noisy or you're not looking at us. And my response was, you're not much to look at, you know?
Yeah, that's just it. And that's why I almost think it's a good thing when I look around the room and you can tell that people are still engaged. It's not people are daydreaming.
Yeah.
But the world is kind of busy these days when it comes to, you know, keeping an eye on your email and keeping an eye on other things. So I think there are some etiquette rules that are getting slightly revised here and there.
Yeah, I agree. Some for the better. Some we'll have to wait and see.
Oh, yeah. Well, some are definitely worse. I mean, my students have not figured out that when you're looking at your phone, it should be only with half your attention, at least keep half your attention on what's going on around you.
Yeah.
Sometimes that gets them in trouble quite a bit.
Right. It is an interesting problem. Distraction and all that is quite an interesting problem. Okay. So the next one is actually an item you brought up, and I'm not even quite sure what it is. So you tell me what is now gone.
In iOS 7, Apple introduced iTunes Radio, which was a series of curated radio channels where basically Apple chose a bunch of music in a certain genre, and you could turn it on and listen to it, and you could customize it to some extent. So this was Apple's stab at a Pandora-like system.
Okay. I obviously not only never used it, I didn't even know it was there.
Yeah, I completely understand. I don't think a lot of people realize it was there. I enjoyed using it.
Yeah.
Especially when the movie Frozen came out, they had a Frozen radio that was all Disney music, so it was kind of fun to listen to. But that has now gone away from free users. It's now just a part of iTunes, Apple Music.
Okay, so you have to pay $10 a month. What does Apple charge for Apple Music?
Yeah, $10 a month. So I've been paying that now for a few months, and I've been happy with Apple Music. I've started to not feel so freaked out if I have Apple Music tracks in my iTunes. For a long time, I would start adding music to my Apple Music, and then at some point go, okay, I guess I have to buy this stuff. And, you know, and I haven't done that as much. I've just kind of been happy that my subscription music is living alongside my regular music collection.
Interesting. I never tried Apple Music even during the trial period, so I have no idea what the experience is like, but I'll take your word for it.
You can still try it, though. Yeah, it's whenever you want to start your three-month trial.
Okay. I've been a... I never subscribed to Pandora or Spotify, although I used them, you know, tried them. It was okay. And for whatever reason, I decided one day when Google introduced their Google Music All Access Play, which I think is now just called Google Music, and they offered it for $7.99 a month for life if you sign up during your first 3 months, which I said, well, what the heck, I'll try it for a couple of months. And I like it. It doesn't have quite the content richness that I think Apple has. I know when I look for some songs, it's on iTunes, but it's not on Google Music, but it's rich enough for me, and you can upload, I think, up to 25,000 of your own, you know, songs from CDs, and you'll keep them in the library, so I'm pretty happy with it. And it's hard for me to, you know, justify switching to iTunes or even Spotify, which in many
people it really is, yeah, depending on what you use. If I was cross-platform still regularly where I was using an Android device, I would not keep everything in iTunes.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Google Music is cross-platform. It'll work on anything. Yep. And the other neat thing as a side effect is if you are also a fan of YouTube, and I am a fan of YouTube, you automatically are enrolled in YouTube Red, which eliminates the B-rolls and things, the commercials in various videos. So that's pretty handy.
And as a minor rant, Google, stop bugging me if I want to try YouTube Red.
Oh, you should.
I don't want to try it. I am happy with the current experience I'm getting.
You know, you're one of those people that if you still had a Windows 7 desktop, you'd be so mad that a little upgrade to Windows 10 icon is still in your taskbar.
I still have a Windows 7 virtual machine, and I am kind of mad about
it. Oh, are you seeing it in a virtual machine?
Oh, yeah. And then it says you can't upgrade this because we don't support this driver.
Right, so but they still have the icon.
Yeah, it's still there.
Well, you know, with a simple registry hack, you can...
Well, I hate to even admit this. I still run a Windows XP virtual machine around tax time because it's my tax virtual PC.
Oh.
So about, I guess, 10 years ago now, I built a Windows XP disk image and started installing every year when I bought. I usually buy TaxCut or H&R Block, their version of tax preparation software. I thought, this is crazy. I keep installing this, and then if I need last year's information, right. I've probably reformatted my computer already, so right. I don't have that, or I've changed computers. So I just built a virtual PC image. And every year I boot that image up. It's got all my tax stuff from the previous, like, 7 years. And I load the new software on it and run it. And
that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's been a pretty nice setup for me to keep all those records in their own little container.
Yeah.
But it is still running Windows XP. So I don't let it on the internet very often.
Well, yeah. You know, I was going to say, someday you're going to, on this podcast, you're going to announce, well, you know, I just moved it all to Amazon, Amazon's cloud service, and I'm just booting it up once a year on Amazon. They only charge me for the compute time when I use it, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, that is true. I could do that, but as of now, it's just a 10-gigabyte virtual machine. Although, it is funny, it started out as a Microsoft virtual PC.
Yeah.
Virtual image. Then it was a VMware image for a while, and now it's a VirtualBox image.
Oh.
So I've successfully dual migrated it from virtual machine platform to virtual
machine. We have to talk about, maybe we can, next week we can talk about VirtualBox. You know, I used to be a, I don't know if the word is heavy, but I used to be a frequent user of VirtualBox when I did a lot of virtualization on my devices for one reason or another, mostly for running small Linux boxes or play with things every now and then. But I haven't used it in years, and I need to have you catch me up on what's going on with that.
You haven't missed much.
I haven't missed much.
Okay. It looks pretty much probably exactly the same as when you last used it.
Okay. Next up is something else I haven't used that I use Outlook on Android, but I really haven't used Outlook for iOS.
Outlook for iOS keeps getting more features. Microsoft is dumping serious resources into Outlook for iOS.
Yeah.
So I have, let's see, three iPads and an iPhone. Okay. So I've got four iOS devices that I use regularly. Okay. Right now, two of them use the stock mail client. Two of them use Outlook.
Okay.
And I've been pretty happy with Outlook for my mail. It's fast. It's just as fast as the native client. it will do push Gmail, which was something that Google sunset years ago on iOS when they took away the Exchange accessibility for regular free users. And now this week, Outlook for iOS now has a notification wizard widget, not wizard. Notification wizard would be pretty cool too. But they don't have that yet. He doesn't cast any spells. But he does show you upcoming calendar information in your notification center. So I don't even think the notification widget is all that great. I'm just amazed that Microsoft is actively pushing a lot of updates onto iOS and Outlook. They truly have kind of come to terms with the fact that if you want users, you have to be a software company and not a device company.
Yeah, I have to say, I haven't really paid a lot of attention to the updates for Outlook for Android, but I do use it several times a week, mostly to clean up email accounts that I don't really use much. But it seems to be pretty good. The only thing I wish it could do is, A, I wish it could mark things as junk mail. Mm-hmm. And B, I wish it could deal with all the folders on my IMAP server, because I can't, for example, empty out folders, like junk mail folder, which I don't actually sync. So I'd like to be able to empty out the junk mail folder and the trash folder, and I can't do any of that from here. Actually, I can't do it from the mail client in Windows 10 either, so maybe that's one of their things. We're going to just not let you do things that are useful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, but that's interesting to hear, and I have to say that I feel pretty much the same way about Outlook for Android, even though I haven't been paying as much attention as you have to the iOS version. But it has been getting better, especially doing like mass deletions of email, all the, not spam, what do they call it, gray mail or whatever they call it, where it's kind of just, not spammy mail, but mail that you don't really care about, but it's legit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was kind of my rant, although I will admit Outlook for non-Windows devices has been improving a lot, and I do use the Android version. Okay, you have a rant.
Oh, yes, I do. I am an educator in my day job.
Yep.
I teach, and I've been hanging around education for, 15 years or so now. And
As an educator,
yeah. I taught my first continuing education class at a college, so I became part-time faculty at a university in fall of 2001.
Okay.
So, yeah, about 15 years now. And I have seen some strange things in the education market when it comes to software. In the late 90s and around 2000 when I got into it, the only software educators really had access to do the sorts of things in the classroom that they wanted were pieces of software created for the education market. So this is when smart boards first started appearing and software that allowed you to kind of doodle on slides and things like that. They were all geared toward educators. And because educators typically work at an institution that has a budget for buying such software, they were priced about the same level as anything else that was marketed to educators. So VHS series and any of these other things that educators are typically buying. And that's usually in the $100, $200 price range. Well, now that we're 15 years past, those budget resources that educators did have access to in the past are virtually gone. Mm. It's very hard to make the argument that you want to buy a $100 piece of anything, software, books, whatever. Those resources just don't exist very much anymore. And we have, at the same time, a plethora of free options that have shown up, free or nearly free options. So this week, for example, I was talking with a colleague of mine, and he thanked me for recommending a piece of software called TeamViewer, which everyone in the IT world has heard of TeamViewer.
Sure.
TeamViewer is free for personal use, and mm-hmm. he simply wanted to use it to show his personal computer on the desktop at in his class, to basically do some screen sharing things. And I had another colleague who wanted to use it to help students one-on-one when they were having problems accessing a website here or there and use the remote assistance feature. And it struck me that this is software that's free for personal use. We aren't deploying it throughout the entire university. It mm-hmm. fits within the licensing guidelines for TeamViewer, but yet nobody in my area even knew it existed until I told them about it, because all of the products that they had looked at up until that point were geared toward the education market and were geared toward IT departments in education that could purchase site licenses. So my rant is very simply, companies, don't think that the people you want to be using your product still have the money to buy it at these inflated levels. That hasn't been the case for 10, 15 years. And educators, stop thinking that if you want to use it in the classroom, it has to be marketed to educators. It might be something that anyone on the planet would find in the Apple App Store or find just searching for mirror display or something like that. You can use those products too. They don't have to be, you know, teacher branded to be useful to teachers.
I wonder how true that is for other disciplines. I should note that when you say this, I know you're a university level educator versus a K-12. So is this specific to university level education, or do you think this is just true throughout just education in general?
I think it is. It extends beyond university. I think it does extend to K-12. K-12 has been in so many different things over the last 10, 15 years, especially with No Child Left Behind. And now that we've got a new version of the educational guidelines that are getting rid of No Child Left Behind, it is, I don't see financial resources devoted to technology in the way that they were in the late 90s and early 2000s. And especially the fact that if you think about this happened in the IT industry in the 80s and 90s, where IT purchases used to be done by the senior IT geek or whoever it was. And if it looked like it had a lot of great features and it looked like it was worth the price, they would buy it. And then about 1990 or so, executives started saying, you know what, we're going to be making the purchasing decisions, and we aren't going to care if it has all the tech bells and whistles. We want support, and we want upgrade cycles and things like that. And I think in the same way that happened in K-12, where around 2000, it was still, if you were the computer teacher at a high school, you had tremendous ability to purchase things that were useful in your computer lab. And then 5 years later, it all went through a central committee at the district level, and you were lucky if you could get a little bit of money to try out new software or try out a new technique with your students.
Interesting. Okay, so that has been John's rant corner for this week. I think you've been on a series. You've had a series of rants, you know.
I just always have rants, you know. I'm a very curmudgeonly annoying
person. You're not old enough to be curmudgeonly.
I'm getting there, Todd. I'm rapidly approaching it.
All righty. So, this has been Lee's podcast number 147. Hope you enjoyed it. We're planning to have a special guest on Mobile Views podcast number 148. So let's fingers crossed we can get him on board. We had a little bit of a scheduling conflict the last time we tried, but hopefully this time will work. I know I'm looking forward. Giant's looking forward. It should be a lot of fun when we get him. Alrighty. We will talk to you next time, folks.